Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, August the 9th, 2020. Section A, Energy. New price benchmark reflects exports' importance, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. In the 5 years since the U.S. lifted its ban on exporting domestic crude, exports have soared to about 3 million barrels daily. That new reality is not reflected in the traditional oil price benchmark of West Texas Intermediate, which has long been tied to the storage hub in Cushing, Oklahoma. To address this new reality, S&P Global Platts has begun publishing a new benchmark, American Gulf Coast, CQ, Select, to reflect the rising importance of Texas and particularly Houston in the U.S. and global economies. The company was soon joined by other price reporting agencies in reporting the new benchmark price. What is West Texas Intermediate? Asked Richard Swan, editorial director, American Oil Imports with S&P Global Platts. It's a name that's almost a victim of its own success. For most of the world, it's not WTI Midland, but WTI Cushing, and that's part of the Midland price. The price for Midland crude is linked to the Cushing differentials. Swan said in a phone interview that the catalyst for launching the new benchmark was when future prices for WTI plunged to a negative $37 per barrel on April 20th. He said no other producing areas saw their prices go negative on that day. Producers tell us we shouldn't be exposed to prices like that. That doesn't reflect the value of the oil, Swan said. For decades, Permian Basin crude has been shipping to Cushing with its massive amounts of storage and pipeline terminals that then ship crude to refineries elsewhere. But new pipelines carrying crude out of the Permian are increasingly headed to the Gulf Coast, specifically the ports of Corpus Christi and Houston. What has changed is the importance of exports, said Swan. There's still a surplus of WTI that comes out of Midland, and that surplus is being exported. That's where the price is being established. That's where you have to find buyers, the global market. Swan said the new benchmark does not guarantee price stability for Permian Basin producers, but does offer more transparency as to where pricing is being established. Cushing has not reflected Midland's market conditions for years, he said. We want the price to be relevant and meaningful to people, he said. The new benchmark has been endorsed by companies such as Harold Hamm's Continental Resources, which Swan pointed out does not export its crude, and the U.S. Secretary of Energy. April 20th was genuinely a moment when the industry wanted change, he said. That doesn't happen often. The industry likes stability. But April 20th was the catalyst where the industry said it wanted change. It wanted something better. County. Proposed budget includes changes for DA's office, by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Midland County Judge Terry Johnson's proposed 2021 budget, released on the heels of a lawsuit against Johnson by District Attorney Laura Nodoff, contains changes to Nodoff's office, including two units that have been moved to other departments. Nodoff filed a civil suit on Wednesday alleging that Johnson failed to fulfill his duties as a public servant by not filing the county budget before the end of July. Local government code mandates the budget be prepared in July. However, County Attorney Russell Malm stated in a response to the lawsuit that the law does not set a deadline for when it needs to be filed. Johnson filed the proposed $180 million budget with the county clerk Thursday evening, according to a copy of the budget available on Midland County's website. Some notable changes were to the structure of the district attorney's office. This may be why I have a lawsuit, Johnson said in an interview. The Environmental Enforcement Unit, which investigates environmental violations and enforces public health laws, was moved from the District Attorney's Office to the Emergency Management Department, the proposed county budget shows. The environmental investigators in the unit's budget of $159,000 were also moved to emergency management. Johnson said the unit was under emergency management before he took office 2 years ago, and he moved it back to give the commissioner's court more oversight. He said the district attorney's office was unresponsive when asked to provide updates on their unit's investigations. The district attorney's office, Bomb Dog, was moved as well to the Midland County Sheriff's Office, according to Johnson. He said it made more sense for the Bomb Dog to be under the supervision of the sheriff's office. The proposed budget also includes funds for capital projects. One budget, Johnson said he hopes to begin next year, is the Water Source Project, which would connect Midland County to the water pipeline in Winkler County. Johnson said the county previously purchased the water rights to use the pipeline, and the project would provide another water source for Midland County. The $20 million project likely will take 3 years to complete, Johnson said, beginning with $5 million budgeted for construction next year. Additionally, there is $3 million in Johnson's proposal budgeted for an expansion project. Johnson said that project involves a city block the county recently purchased where the old Salvation Army building is located. Several buildings could be constructed on that block, including a law enforcement building and a mental health facility, Johnson said. The proposed budget will be discussed by the Commissioner's Court in several budget hearings beginning before its approval, and the court will have the option to vote on changes. The 2021 fiscal year will begin in October. Budget discussions will kick off Monday when the Commissioner's Court proposes a property tax rate. Nodoff previously declined to comment on the lawsuit, citing the ongoing litigation in a statement to the Reporter-Telegram. She requested in the suit for the budget to be filed immediately and for a mandate to be set requiring the budget to be filed by July 31st in future years. A hearing on the suit was delayed after the first judge assigned to the case recused himself, and it has now been assigned to a judge in Ector County. Education. Committee co-chair, members should approach work with grace. There are very strong positions on the subject coming from all sides, Felt said. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Those taking part in the renaming process of Robert E. Lee High School should approach the work with grace, respect for everyone's opinions, and with an understanding that there are very strong positions on the subject coming from all sides, said the committee co-chair, Blake Felt, Executive Director of Athletics for Midland ISD. The Midland ISD Board this past week approved the Citizens Renaming Committee that has been tasked with recommending new names for Robert E. Lee High School and the Freshman High School. Felt said he plans to meet with public co-chair Shannon Lowe this week. Trustees last week also appointed two at-large members, Josh Sperry and Mary Del Fryer. Others selected to participate in the renaming of the high school and freshman high school include Young Women Leadership Academy principal Jennifer Seibert, teachers Bo Garza and Ellen Boyd, and two students whose names were not released. Each board member will also appointed two people from their respective districts. Felt said it is important the committee members approach their upcoming discussions with open minds, without any expectations, and be ready to listen to other community members. Midland has set up a site for those interested in submitting a possible name for the school, midlandisd.net/rename. The district reports that new names must fall into one of the following categories: presidents, state persons, and persons of national fame; governors, state persons and persons of Texas fame; national, state, and local educators; community and civic leaders; national, state, and local symbols or events. Possible names have been suggested even in letters to the editor and opinion articles in the Reporter-Telegram. One group of Lee High School parents and graduates that called themselves Fam Lee asked for the school to be named Lee, which they wrote could stand for Legacy of Education Excellence. like a recently renamed Robert E. Lee School in San Antonio, or leadership excellence and equality. We believe there is a compromise that pleases most. Remove all references to the Confederacy while recognizing past, current, and future students' love and passion for their school, wrote Tiffany Mead on behalf of the group in the August 2nd edition. This common ground would likely save MISD upward of millions of dollars to rebrand the school. On Thursday, board members at Tyler ISD voted to change the name of its Robert E. Lee High School to Tyler Legacy, which won favor from trustees over another proposed option, Tyler Liberty, according to a report in the Dallas Morning News. Felt said there are no expectations that the school would be renamed after a person, including prominent graduates Laura Bush or General Tommy Franks. The only expectation is that the group will provide either one, two, or three recommendations to the superintendent. The superintendent will then present those recommendations to the board for final approval no later than October 19th. The group could also recommend a mascot or school symbol, Felt said, or the committee could allow the student body to make that decision. The board also approved appointments to the committee. They are Shirley Howard from District 1 and John Norman from District 1, Alfred Sanchez and Stacy Martinez from District 2, Frank Maldonado and Ashley Bourne from District 3, Rachel Stone and Steve Subia from District 4, Todd Brown and Valerie Tinker from District 5, Noble Kendrick and Monica Stroman Tucker from District 6, Roderick Strambler and Sarah Hale from District 7. City. Average is one COVID death a day over the last 4 weeks, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. The Midland Health Department reports an average of one Midland County resident dying because of coronavirus-related issues every day over the last 4 weeks, or going back to July 12th. The actual total is 30 deaths over those 28 days, according to the health department. There were 7 reported last week, including 3 on Friday, bringing the total to 34 since the beginning of July, and the total number of COVID-19-related deaths during the pandemic to 49. The 49th patient, a man in his 70s, died Friday. He was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital and had underlying health conditions. In terms of total cases, the number of new cases shows Midland County is still in the midst of a COVID-19 spike. This past week, there were 414 cases reported, the second most of any week during the pandemic. Had Friday's reported total of 22 not been the lowest in around 2 months, a new weekly count would have been likely. This past week marked the second that 400 or more were reported. Reporter Telegram records indicate there have been an average of 401 over the past 3 weeks. The total during the pandemic is 2,592. Should Midland County coronavirus cases continue on its current pace, there will be more than 3,000 at this time next week. Compare that to June 30th when there were 701. The Midland Department of Health again reported another jump in recoveries. The 1,331 was an increase of 147 a week over a week and a 478 higher than 2 weeks ago.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, August 9th, 2020. Obituaries and death notices. Obituaries. Jack Raymond Skiles. Jack Raymond Skiles, 89, of Langtree and Midland, passed away on August 5th, 2020. Wilmoth, the love of his life and wife of 68 years, was at his side. Jack was born March 20th, 1931, in Del Rio, Texas, to Guy and Vosti Barnes Skiles, and lived his childhood at Langtree, Texas. Following high school graduation in Del Rio, he attended Sol Ross State University, where he obtained a B.S. degree in 1952 and M.A. degree in 1953. He met Wilmoth McCarty at Sol Ross, and they married on September 1st, 1951, in Mertzon. Jack was preceded in death by his parents, aunts, and uncles. He is survived by his wife, Wilmoth, daughter Peggy Skiles of Big Spring, son Jack Raymond Skiles, Jr. of Alpine, and son Russell Skiles and his wife Diane of La Mesa. He was especially proud of his granddaughter Kimberly and Kimberly's husband Nathan Vaughn and their daughter Lily Rose of Polokwane, South Africa, and his grandson Aaron of La Mesa. A memorial service will be scheduled for a later date. Memories and tributes may be written at https://www.gwcoxmemorialfuneralhome.com/obituaries/. Donations in honor of Jack may be made to the nonprofit Shumla Archaeological Center at www.shumla.org/donate or to their mailing address, 5706 East Mockingbird Lane, /115-363, Dallas, Texas, 75206. Martha Lee Yester. Martha Lee Yester, née Rhodes, was born in Akron, Ohio on May 3, 1930, to O.B. and Florence Calabau Rhodes and peacefully passed into the arms of her Savior on June 17, 2020, at the age of 90. Martha, better known as Marty, spent her early childhood in Antioch, a small rural community in southern Ohio, and attended Perry Rural School there. After high school, she was employed as a bank teller and later as a customer representative for the local gas utility company. On September 29, 1950, she married longtime family friend and love of her life, Grady Yester, who was attending Marietta College at the time. They were married in the First Christian Church, New Martinsville, West Virginia. Marty left a legacy of compassion, love, and caring for her family, all of whom she loved dearly and who in turn loved her. She was preceded in death by her parents, son Richard and sister Faye Coulter. Family survivors are her husband of 69 years, Grady, son Michael, Gail, and grandsons Reed, Whitney, and Scott, Charlotte, expecting in September, all of Calgary, AB, Canada. Daughter Kathy, Richard, who lives in Fresno, California, as does grandson Corey, Kristen, and granddaughter Emily, Kyle. Emily and Kyle are the parents of Marty's and Grady's three great-grandchildren, Hudson Thomas, Parker Graydon, and Blake Catherine. Numerous nieces and nephews also survive her. No memorial or celebration of life service is planned for now due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the uncertainties of travel restrictions, quarantines, and potential personal illness exposure associated with it. This decision was made after much agonizing over not being able to express respect, compassion, and love for Martha in a traditional celebration of life. The family has been deeply humbled by the generosity, condolences, and kind words that have been received from her many friends, and sincerely thank everyone for your compassion and expression of sympathy. Those wishing to establish a memorial can make the gift to a charity of their choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Patricia Patsy Lynn Loraldi. Patricia Patsy Lynn Loraldi, 52, was called home to be with our Heavenly Father and her daddy on August 5, 2020, at Midland Memorial Hospital. She was born on May 14, 1968, in Merced, California, to Modesta Pruitt. She was a 1986 graduate of Rankin High School. She was a loving mother, daughter, sister, aunt, and grandmother. Those who knew her knew she was a diehard Dallas Cowboys and NASCAR fan. She is preceded in death by her father, Juan Guerra. She is survived by her mother of Rankin, Texas, husband Gilbert Loraldi of Rankin, Texas, brothers Mike, Mary Pruitt of Rankin, Texas, Kenny Pruitt of Rankin, Texas, Wesley Laurie Pruitt of Big Lake, Texas, and JoJo Mindy Guerra of Rankin, Texas. Sisters Dorina Johnny Abalos of Rankin, Texas, Juanita Kenny Terry Godet of Rankin, Texas, and Chris Gaddis of Rankin, Texas. Children Eric Cecilia Lopez of Lubbock, Texas, daughter Jamie Brown of Rankin, Texas, Stephen Lopez of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, son Armando Carolina Armendariz III of Plainview, Texas, grandkids Sebastian, Gavin, Tiana, Marley, and Brooklyn. Survived by many nieces, nephews, friends, and her beloved companion, Piper. Family will be accepting visitors on Thursday, August 13th, 2020, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Rankin Park Building, 310 East 10th Street, Rankin, Texas, 79778. A celebration of life will be held at the Rankin Park Building, 310 East 10th Street, Rankin, Texas, 79778, at 10 a.m. on Friday, August 14th, 2020. Floral services are being provided by Venegas Flower Shop, 919 South Burleson Avenue, McCamey, Texas, 79752. 432-652-3993. Arrangements are entrusted to Avala Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home of Midland, Texas. Terry Lee Lindsay Stanley. Terry Lee Lindsay Stanley of Midland passed away on Tuesday, October 4th, 2020, surrounded by her family. A gathering for friends and family will be announced at a later date. She was born on March 25th, 1954, in Midland, Texas, to Toombs Jacob and Alva Jo Price Lindsay. Terry graduated from Midland High School in 1972 and attended Texas Tech before marrying her high school sweetheart, Gerald Frank Stanley, on November 24th, 1973. She retired from Midland Memorial Hospital, where she worked as an insurance biller, in 2018. Terry was a warm-hearted soul who will be loved, cherished, and dearly missed. She loved her family and enjoyed her grandchildren tremendously. Terry is survived by her daughter, Emily Thurman Cohen, and her husband, Barry, of Austin, Texas, son, Barrett P. Stanley, and his wife, Lila, of Midland, Texas, grandchildren Madeline and Abigail Thurman and Kalisa Cohen of Austin, Texas, Alexis, Allison, Frankie, Ada, and Alyssa Stanley of Midland, Texas, brothers Mike Lindsay and his wife Louise, Bob Lindsay and his wife Kristen, sister Lana Lindsay Hay and her husband Richard, all from Katy, Texas. She was preceded in death by her parents, Tom and Joe Lindsay, her parents-in-law, William Benjamin Stanley, Nora Casimir Stanley Thornhill, and Savoy Thornhill, and her husband of 31 years and lifelong companion, Gerald Frank Stanley. The family would like to express their gratitude towards Hospice of Midland, hospital staff at MD Anderson, and Methodist hospitals in Katy and Houston, Texas, and countless friends that have offered phenomenal support during this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Esther Edna Tovar. Esther Edna Tovar, 56, of Midland, passed away August 5th, 2020. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, August 12th, 2020, at the Branch at NPW, 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Feliz Nieto Rico. Feliz Nieto Rico, 78, of Midland, passed away at Midland Memorial Hospital on Friday, August 7th, 2020. A rosary will be held at 7 p.m., Monday, August 10th, 2020, at Nellie Pickland Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will take place at 10 a.m. Tuesday, August 11th, 2020, at Nellie Pickland Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Felice is survived by her husband, Eduardo Rico. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Jovita Garcia Mancha. Jovita Garcia Mancha, 90, of Odessa, Texas, passed away Thursday, August 6th, 2020. Viewing will be Sunday, August 9th, 2020, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., and Monday, August 10th, 2020, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with her rosary to be recited that evening at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel, 405 North Terrell Street, Midland, Texas. Funeral Mass will be celebrated on Tuesday, August 11th, 2020, at 1 p.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church, 7601 North Grandview Avenue, Odessa, Texas. Burial will follow at Rose Hill Cemetery in Odessa, Texas. She is survived by her two sons, Delfino Mancha and Joaquin Mancha, both of Odessa, three daughters, Leonarda Judy Mancha, Georgia Gomez, and Rosie M. Bermea, all of Odessa.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 9th, 2020. High-level radioactivity at Andrews. Leaders review Nuclear Regulatory Commission plan by Bob Campbell. Andrews. The proposed installation of a high-level nuclear waste repository alongside the low-level plant 30 miles west of here is prompting criticism, support, and caution from officials, including Congressman Mike Conaway, State Senator Kel Seliger, and State Representative Brooks Landgraf. In a joint venture, waste control specialists of Dallas and Orano USA, a subsidiary of the French company Orano, have formed the Andrews-based Interim Storage Partners Incorporated and applied to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission to start taking radioactive fuel rods with a half-life of 24,000 years from nuclear power plants. The WCS facility is on 1,338 acres, and the companies own 14,900 acres on which to expand near Eunice, New Mexico. The NRC expects to come to a decision by May 2021. Texas Governor Greg Abbott wrote to the NRC and U.S. Energy Department in April last year, saying in part, "Actions taken by the DOE and NRC could allow for the disposal of more highly radioactive waste in Texas without approval by our state. The federal government should allow states with disposal sites for low-level radioactive waste to accept or reject such changes rather than forcing them to take on increased hazards," Abbott said. "At this time, I oppose any increase in the amount or concentration of radioactivity authorized for disposal at the facility in Andrews County. Texas is ready to work cooperatively with our federal partners to safely manage the use and disposal of radioactive materials. In the spirit of that relationship, please consider measures to allow for state approval of any changes you would propose. However, Conaway said through a Washington spokeswoman August 4th that he supports the plan because the citizens of Andrews do. The community of Andrews strongly supports the project and is already home to a licensed established waste facility with a proven track record of safety, the Midland Republican said. If the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC, approves this additional site, I am confident that it will also serve as a safe and secure solution for waste disposal. The NRC held public hearings on the plan in Hobbs, New Mexico, and Andrews, February 17th and 19th, and will take public comments through November 3rd at WCS_CIS_EIS@nrc.gov or the Office of Administration, Mail Stop TWFN-7-A60M. Attention Program Management Announcements and Editing Staff, U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Washington, D.C., 20555-0001. Andrews City Manager Steve Eggleston said there was a good deal of criticism of the 40-year proposal at the February hearing, but that Mayor Flora Braley and County Judge Charlie Falcon remain supportive. There was a lot of opposition from non-Andrews people and from new people in town who were strongly vocal because they were worried about what would happen to their kids, Eggleston said. It's a matter of getting out and educating the community again because there is more opposition now than there was 5 or 10 years ago. Eggleston said Braley and Falcon are determined to do what their constituents want and will fight the project if the majority tips the other way. Noting that the repository staff has numbered between 100 and 200 people and that it is one of the county's top 10 employers, he said the plant has an excellent safety record and that ISP Vice President Alicia Sanchez is giving tours to build support. The mayor and judge are strongly backing the company, Eggleston said. ISP spokeswoman Karen Johnson of Austin said the ISP and WCS operations will remain separate if the plan goes forward. The U.S. nuclear energy industry is one of the most highly regulated industries in the world and one with the strongest safety culture among its many private company providers, Johnson said. A direct result of this safety focus is more than 50 years of storing, transporting, and dry storage of used nuclear fuel by private companies without a single incident causing harm to people or the environment. Additionally, the proposed site is a uniquely well-suited location adjacent to the current WCS facility with its robust geology, experienced workforce, and stellar 20-year-plus safety record. Johnson said there had been no cases of cancer attributable to WCS operations. Doses to workers are all well below Texas and federal regulatory limits, she said. Democratic congressional nominee John Mark Hogg of San Antonio said Congress will have to approve the permit if the NRC grants a license to store up to 45,000 metric tons of spent nuclear waste because current law does not allow it. Referring to the Nevada site that was closed by the Obama administration in 2009, Hogg said the plan is for surface storage out in the West Texas sun, not deep underground storage, as had been the plan at Yucca Mountain. Professionals in the industry recommend against locating highly radioactive nuclear waste in the vicinity of valuable mineral resources like oil and gas. This appears to be a classic case of foreign companies, outsiders, and wealthy corporations planning to make billions off the taxpayers Nuclear Waste Disposal Fund. While a small rural area that does not have the potential clout to stop them bears the consequences. Seliger said he will do the best I can to represent the people of Andrews County, but I think an awful lot of examination needs to be done before high-level waste goes in there. The feasibility of it is being studied by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and the State Bureau of Economic Geology, the Amarillo Republican said. The decision needs to be made very carefully with public input and acceptance, and I think we are a long way from there. Asked if he was concerned that a private company would manage the repository, Seliger said, "No, Pantex has been manufacturing and storing nuclear weapons near Amarillo for decades. It's not a safe situation with spent fuel rods being stored at electrical plants like Comanche Peak near Fort Worth and the South Texas Nuclear Generating Station near Victoria. This kind of thing can be done safely, but we have to be sure it's done safely way out into the future." Seliger noted that the DOE's waste isolation plant east of Carlsbad, New Mexico, stores defense-oriented transuranic or very radioactive waste in a salt formation 2,150 feet underground. Landgraf said he will determine how much backing the plan has by visiting Andrews and talking to people, not just the influential citizens and elected officials, but also the hardworking everyday people. In the discussions I have had, they were very supportive of low-level storage, the Odessa Republican said. It's different for high-level storage. The project has not been authorized at this point, and there are quite a few people who don't feel they have enough information to make a decision. I will support whatever decision they make as a community. Calling for a calm, well-reasoned process, Landgraf said, it's a sensitive issue. The worst thing that can happen is fear-mongering or a whitewash. We need to let the voices of the people who will be most affected be heard and not be drowned out by anybody else. The public deserves to know all the facts and to be able to make an informed decision without any sort of exaggeration or misinformation. Brown doubles hospital duties. Odessa Regional Medical Center leader takes same role in Big Spring. By Ruth Campbell. For some, running two hospitals would be daunting, but it's just another challenge to Stacy Brown. Recently, Brown, president of Odessa Regional Medical Center, became president of Scenic Mountain Medical Center in Big Spring as well. The hospitals are owned by Steward Healthcare. I'm always excited to take on new challenges, but more importantly, it makes sense with us being part of the same system, the native Odessan said. Noting she has a strong leadership team at ORMC, Brown said there is similar talent at Scenic Mountain, and she doesn't think ORMC will suffer. I'm confident we will continue to move forward with our strategic initiatives, and I believe I can bring good leadership to Scenic Mountain. There are synergies we can achieve by working closely together, she said. For example, the Big Spring Hospital is preparing to have its first accreditation survey by DNVGL, Det Norske Veritas of Norway, and Germanischer Lloyd of Germany. So ORMC can help it work through last-minute details. Brown said ORMC has been using DNVGL as its accrediting body for 11 years. Another benefit is sharing staff. If one facility has nurses in a particular area that the other needs, the other hospital can send them over. There are opportunities to do that across the board, frankly, in most of the disciplines that we share. We've done it some already with respiratory therapy. ORMC has about 800 employees and 225 beds, while Scenic Mountain has 250 employees and 146 beds. Another thing I've done is appoint Chief Administrating administrative officers at both facilities. So in both cases, it will be the CFOs, chief financial officer at Scenic Mountain and Odessa Regional, transitioning into this chief administrative role, she said. They'll represent me if I'm not on site at any given time when they need someone there, although I'm obviously available via phone and all that, Brown said. I participate in meetings and different things at both hospitals, regardless of where I am on any given day. Brown went into a chief operating officer's position for 2 years and just had her 10th anniversary as ORMC's CEO. I have almost 30 years of experience in healthcare administration, about 15 years as chief financial officer, and then several years as chief operating officer, she said. I'm now working on my 11th year here at Odessa Regional as the CEO and president. She has been working with the team at Scenic Mountain for several weeks to get up to speed on initiatives they were working on, and she consulted with Scenic Mountain President CEO Emma Craybill before Craybill left to be CEO of Doctors Hospital in Laredo. Brown added that she is working with key community leaders. The first 6 months to a year will probably be quite challenging until she builds those relationships and learns Scenic Mountain like she knows ORMC. But once I do, it's going to make it easy, she said. We have many of the same service lines, and we have the same overall goals, which are growth, quality, and financial performance. I don't think it will be that difficult once I get through the transition stage. Brown was presented the chance to take on both hospitals and didn't think twice. I think it's a logical thing to do, and I think we'll gain a lot more efficiencies and synergies between the two hospitals by having one leader, she said. Odessa Chamber of Commerce President CEO Renee Earls was excited about Brown's new job. Earls said Brown will chair the Odessa Chamber's board of directors after working with the organization for many years. Stacy will do an excellent job, said Earls. I love that she is an Odessa native, and honestly, she could work in her field at any hospital throughout the country, yet she chooses to work in her hometown, and that's been a great decision for her as well as for the rest of our community. Stacy is a proven leader in her industry, and she leads our community. One of her most positive attributes is that she puts people first, and having her apply that at her business has made her a standout CEO. I believe that Steward saw that when they decided to give her both roles, Earls said. Brown graduated from Permian High School and then Texas Tech University with a BBA in accounting. Stacy and her husband Michael together have 3 daughters and 2 sons, ranging from 15 to 26. She was in public accounting for 5 years and went to ORMC. I just worked my way up, she said. I started in a staff-level accounting position in 1991 and was promoted to CFO in 1994. In 99, I went to Trinity Medical Center in Carrollton for 4 years as CFO. I came back as CFO of ORMC in 03 because Odessa is my home and we wanted our family to be in Odessa. In 07, when IASIS Healthcare of Franklin, Tennessee acquired Alliance Hospital, they talked to me about being the future CEO because they knew that this was where I wanted to be, Brown said. Odessa Regional bought Alliance in 2007. ORMC renovation. Brown said the maternity service department at ORMC's West Campus is being renovated. The project will take about 18 months and will be complete in late 2020 or early 2021. It won't disrupt care in any service line, she said. The West Campus is the oldest of the hospital's 3 with the specialties of labor and delivery, postpartum care, high-risk obstetrics, and neonatal intensive care. This is a project we've been working on for some time, and we finally have the approval to move forward on it. It's about a $13 million project, Brown said. We will renovate almost all the patient care areas within that campus, starting with a new front entrance. So we'll have an updated look to the front of the building and a new lobby with minor construction to expand it. We'll redo all the corridors and waiting rooms, every patient room, labor and delivery, antepartum, and other areas. New fixtures, floor coverings, wall coverings, artwork, and some new equipment will also be installed. We'll renovate a space we're not using on the first floor that will have our new obstetrics emergency room that we opened in April, Brown said. Adjacent to that space, we will include three operating rooms that were previously taken out of service that we'll put back into service with new equipment to do surgeries on that campus. Quick hits. Leadership Odessa. Leadership Odessa is now accepting enrollment through Friday. Program sessions are scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every third Thursday of each month. Sessions and topics include orientation, September date to be announced, government and public safety, business and industry, history and culture, medical services, media and education, social services, John Maxwell Seminar, and roundup and graduation. Leadership Odessa is a program of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce that attracts a diverse group of businessmen and women. Each class is comprised of 30-plus participants from a variety of sectors, including education, medical, small business, banking, industry, hospitality, and nonprofit. Enrollment is open to anyone who currently lives or works in Odessa and whose organization is a chamber member. If you are new to Odessa, it's the quickest way to get plugged into the community. Enrollment fee is $700, includes 7-day long sessions spaced over 9 months. Scholarships for one-half tuition may be available for nonprofit organizations. Limited availability. Class is formed on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information, call Lynn Van Amberg at 333-7862 or email lynnva at odessachamber.com. To enroll, visit tinyurl.com/y5rk2rbk. Obituaries and death notices for Sunday, August 9th. Ryan Cade Campbell, Aledo. Rylan Cade Campbell was born January 15th, 1999. In Odessa, to parents Holly Hogan Campbell and Brad Campbell. He lost his life in a vehicle accident August 1st. He will be remembered at the Mahopa Ranch, 1717 County Road 104 in Cisco, August 15th at 1:15. Surviving him are Ashley Brooke Campbell, his sister, Holly Hogan Campbell, his mother, Bradley Scott Campbell, his father, Ted and Jody Hogan, maternal grandparents, Jeff and Brittany Hogan, uncle and aunt, Rachel Hardy, aunt, Daddy Bill and Mary Estes, great-grandparents, Ann Mefford, great-grandmother, Gunner and Steely Hogan, cousins, and numerous other close family. He was preceded in death by his paternal grandparents, Ronald Campbell and Paula Wheatley, his maternal great-grandmother, Joyce Estes. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts can be donated to the Ryland Campbell Fly High Scholarship, benefiting future Oklahoma State piloting majors. Donations can be sent to the OSU Foundation, 400 South Monroe, Stillwater, Oklahoma, 74074. Ina Holland Wadle. Ina Holland Wadle passed away August 4th. She was born Ina Muriel Holland, March 16th, 1935, in Rusk County. She married her husband Billy Odell Wadle in 1951. Preceding her in death are her parents, Robert and Dina Holland, her husband, Billy Odell Wadle, sister Nelda and husband, Aaron Cooper, brother Bobby Holland, daughter-in-law, Patty Wadle, father and mother-in-law, Johnny and Iva Mae Wadle, and in-laws, Bob Stamper, H.G. and Marie Greer, Johnny and Wilda Wadle, Jerry and Francis Wadle, and Bobby Wadle. She is survived by her sons, Mike, and wife, Peggy Wadle of Odessa, David Wadle of Odessa, Rick and wife, Debbie of Spring, 8 grandchildren, 9 great-grandchildren, her brother, Wayne, and wife, Ellen of Kilgore, sister, Diane Stamper of Longview, and in-laws, Haskell, and wife, Corrine of Selwyn City, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. A family visitation was held Sunday, August 9th at Odessa Funeral Home. A celebration of life funeral service will be held at Central Baptist Church in Odessa Monday, August 10th at 11 a.m., officiated by Vonnie Taylor. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Gardens immediately after the service. Jovita Garcia Mancha. Jovita Garcia Mancha, 90, of Odessa, passed away August 6th. She was born in Benjamin, February 2nd, 1930, with her twin sister Dominga by her side, to Gregoria de Mariche and Guadalupe M. Garcia, and raised by her mother Eufemia Quesada after her biological mother passed away after childbirth. She married Jesus O. Mancha, Sr. in 1953. She is survived by her children, Delfino and wife Lupe, daughter-in-law Mary Perkins, Leonarda and wife Judy Mancha, Georgia and husband John Gomez, Rosie and husband Manuel Bermea, Joaquin and wife Norma Mancha, 23 grandchildren, 58 great-grandchildren, and 6 great-great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband, Jesus O. Mancha, Sr., her son, Jesus O. Mancha, Jr., a grandson, Jesus Mancha III, a daughter-in-law, Lupe Leal Mancha, her twin sister, Dominga Sanchez, and 4 great-grandbabies, as well as her biological parents and mother, and 3 half-sisters. Viewings will be August 9th from 1 to 9 p.m., August 10th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., August 11th from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral Mass will be at 1 p.m. Tuesday, August 11th at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Odessa, with burial following at Rose Hill Cemetery in Odessa. The family would like to express their gratitude to all the wonderful nurses at MCH 7 Central. Kenneth Ray Kenny Wyatt. Kenny Wyatt, 77, of Odessa, passed away July 25th. He was born March 12, 1943, in Shamrock to R.L. Wyatt and Dorothy Mae Hiller Wyatt. He married Susan Kennedy in 2014. Surviving him are his wife, Susie, son, Michael Wyatt, and wife, Cassie of Melissa, daughter, Mitzi Wyatt of Brownwood, 7 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren, as well as many nieces and nephews and extended family. He is preceded in death by his first wife, Annette, his parents, a son, Steve Wyatt, and a brother, Curtis Wyatt. Family visitation will be held Friday, August 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Permian Basin Fair office in Odessa. A celebration of Kenny's life will be held Saturday, August 15th at 10 a.m. in Building A, Ector County Coliseum, with Ken Black officiating. Interment will be Tuesday, August 18th at 9 a.m. at the Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to St. Jude's Hospital, Shriners Hospital, or a charity of your choice. Bobby Earl Gard. Bobby Earl Gard, 85, of Odessa, passed away Monday, July 27th. He was born January 20th, 1935, in Drumright, Oklahoma, to C. Gard and Althea Morrell. Survivors include his wife of 59 years, Rachel, Mark Gard, his son, daughters Serena Freeland and husband Paul, and Sherry Wilson and husband Steve Brown, sister Norma Slayton and husband Bill, numerous extended family members and friends, as well as 4 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents and sisters Cordelia Gard and Roberta Harvey. Services will be held at a later date. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Irene Del Bosque Marquez. Irene Del Bosque Marquez passed away August 5th. She is survived by her husband, Joe Marquez. Death notices. Jose Jimenez Espinoza. Jose Jimenez Espinoza, 73, of Odessa, died Monday, August 3rd. A celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Tuesday, August 11th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow Thursday at 10 a.m., August 13th, in Prairie Haven Cemetery in Hobbs, New Mexico, with ministry leader Maceo Chavez officiating. Martin A. Gutierrez. Martin A. Gutierrez, 41, of Odessa, died Saturday, August 1st. A funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. August 10th at St. Anthony Catholic Church in Odessa. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery with Father Chavez officiating. Arrangements are by La Paz Parish Funeral Homes of Odessa. Ronald Dean Ronnie Key. Ronnie Key, 76, of Odessa, died Monday, August 3rd. A graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. August 10th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Mildred Benita Lewis. Mildred Benita Lewis, 92, died Saturday, July 25th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, and Crematory of Midland. Malachi Andrew Zane Cuda Mitchell. Malachi Andrew Zane Cuda Mitchell, 20, of Midland, died Thursday, August 6th. A funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. August 11th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Feliz Nieto Rico. Feliz Nieto Rico, 78, of Midland, died Friday, August 7th. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. August 11th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Royce Lynn Johnny Smith. Johnny Smith, 65, died Thursday, August 6th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.